one of the legendary pro wrestling managers, expanding into all different kinds of walks of life here, restaurant reviews, political commentary. The Louisville Lip can talk about anything you want. And if you were listening to the show a couple of months ago when he made his first appearance with us, you already know that. But then again, you already knew that from everything he's done in his life already. I give you the one and only Jim Cornette, the legend. Jim, welcome back to the FDH Lounge.
Well, Rick, how are you? Yeah, you know, I was waiting by the phone. I felt like the ugly girl that doesn't have a date the night before the prom. My phone wasn't ringing, and did I guess, well, did we zig when we should have zagged?
Yeah, I apologize for that.
But hey, you got my number from the New York Bureau. I just hope it wasn't the Federal Bureau of Investigation, because they've had my number on file for quite some time, and I don't like to stir them up.
Well, Jim, you for right now, anyways, you've got a friendly administration in power in D.C. They're aligned with you, so I don't think you have to worry about that. But
it's good to be back on the program. I appreciate it.
I'm so happy to do that, to bring you back on. We got, just after your last appearance here, this book that I'm holding up to the camera, The Midnight Express and Jim Cornette 25th Anniversary Scrapbook that you and Tim Ash put together. I want to congratulate you. I understand it won the Observer Award for Book of the Year, and that really means a lot based on, you know, the caliber of people, the seriousness of the people who vote in something like that. So congratulations.
Well, and of course, it was the Wrestling Observer Wrestling Book of the Year, to be technical. It wasn't really Book of the Year. I mean, I didn't beat John Grisham or anybody, but I was especially pleased that we got voted the award, because it was the only book in the Wrestling Observer top 10 wrestling books that was not published by, you know, the WWE or the big corporations with the mainstream money behind them. Just our little humble effort, and the wrestling fans really, really got into it, and we had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, that is, you know, really something admirable. Again, you know, the little engine that could here, so to speak, beating out the big guys, the corporate machine. And I guess in some ways that's sort of a metaphor for where you're at in the wrestling profession here at this point. We'll get to that in a second. I did want to ask you, there's a little bit talked about in the book about when you worked briefly, I want to say back around 88 maybe, with Dr. Death Steve Williams, and it wasn't a long run that you got to have with him, but I'd just like to get your thoughts on him. Of course, he passed recently, you know, and just had the terrible incidents with cancer on and off throughout the years. So when you think,
well,
Dr. Death Steve...
there was you know, there's a couple of stories in the book, because we got to work with Dr. Death not only in Louisiana in 1984, when really he was just breaking in, and I had just gotten my, you know, first break in Mid-South Wrestling, but then also again in WCW in Atlanta in the late 80s and on some of the independent shows. So we got a chance to bounce into each other every few years, and Doc was a great guy. But I'll say this, and so many people say, well, so-and-so's tough and so-and-so's tough. Wrestling is full, or was at least at one time, full of tough guys, and all of them thought Dr. Death was the toughest guy.
You know, I always liked him. I always felt like he was somebody, and even before I was a, you know, quote-unquote smart fan, I just had the sense about certain guys that I just felt like there was more that could have been done with him, and he's one of those guys I looked at in that way. The fact that there was never even a unification bout, you know, with the NWA when the merger happened always struck me as kind of,
well,
weird.
Well, but, you know, on the plus side of things, Doc got to spend like 26 weeks a year sitting on the beach in Hawaii when he wrestled in Japan all those years. They would go over for 3- and 4-week tours and be off for a month. So he did have some strong points to go along with his lack of a United States schedule for so many years. He was a lot bigger star than a lot of the people in this country remember, just because he was off television for so long. You know, he was going to Japan 6 months out of the year.
Absolutely. And got a chance to make some appearances in the 90s just to kind of reinforce that as well. The great Doc and Gordy run in WCW in 92, a couple of years later, a little bit of a cameo in ECW and in there with the Eliminators, who I always liked. So, yeah, there was some really, really good stuff that he was able to do. Let me ask you about this, though, in terms of, you know, what-if scenarios. I find them fascinating, whether they be in wrestling, in sports, in politics, in any type of area. Had on the show previously.
You know, I like a what-if story. What if I won the lottery? I think about that one a lot.
Yeah, trust me, I think about that every day. We had on the show previously Missy Hyatt, and I guess this shows what a nerd I am because I engaged in a little bit of fantasy booking with Missy Hyatt, and it all revolved around wrestling. So that there must be something wrong with me.
Yeah, but if you're trading fantasies with Missy Hyatt, you're still talking about wrestling. I think you need to go see the doctor.
Yeah, there might be something wrong with me, but I think I already knew that. But we got talking about that when there was the merger. You and her were on different sides. You were with the NWA at the time. She was with the UWF. She said she thought that, you know, the tag team of Eddie Gilbert, Terry Taylor, the stuff that they were doing, they could have done some great work, she thought, if they came in as, you know, the big heels and everything like that. And I said to her, I've always had this thought that what if it had been one of these kind of things? Because they always had that thing with Mid-South UWF, Bill Watts, you know, we're tough and everybody else is a bunch of cartoons. You know, if they'd have come in as the guys with the chip on their shoulder, you know, outside guys, I could almost imagine a thing like maybe Dusty and the Four Horsemen in the War Games against them. I mean, that would have been like nuclear heat, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, you got to remember that at the time that they sold the company and did the merger, a lot of guys thought that, well, maybe the grass is going to be greener on the other side of the tank and jump to the WWF, a couple of key guys. I think that was when DiBiase left.
Yep.
But I do agree that they should have made the UWF champions a little bit more competitive, but in hindsight, it wasn't working anyway. And, you know, I'm wondering now whether it was botched on anywhere near the level of the WWE WCW invasion when WCW closed down.
No, I think that's true. I mean, it's more of a footnote to history as kind of like an interesting what if, you know, as opposed to, you know, nothing will ever top the invasion for being botched, you know, the way that went.
They did a good job with that one.
Oh,
they had to
God.
Work hard to mess that up.
Oh, and they did. Worst thing ever. You know, as far as that goes, I'll tell you what, too. I talked about it earlier in the show here tonight when I was just kind of running through the stuff with the lineup for tonight. What's very interesting is, you know, we talk about the Monday Night Wars that went on, and we now have the resumption of the Monday Night Wars that are happening here. But as I've seen you point out elsewhere, and by the way, I have to, just a side note, I have to tell you, because there's you've done interviews all over the place like this one, they're all over YouTube. I got to tell you, when I'm doing some busy work at home that's just mindless stuff, I need something on in the background. I love dialing up some Jim Cornette on YouTube and listening to your other interviews and stuff. Great
well, I think you got the description right when you said mindless.
And my mind,
but, you know, I tell you, that's what I'm really spending most of my time on these days is, instead of thinking about the past, thinking about Ring of Honor, thinking about something in the future, some new faces, some young guys. You know, that's why I'm excited about this internet pay-per-view concept, the Big Bang that we're going to be doing in Charlotte on April 3rd. You probably heard about that because it's gotten so much buzz in the wrestling industry. And, you know, anymore, when you look back, all you can see is, it was so great, but now nobody talks about wrestling being great. The fans are dissatisfied with the product, and I think with Ring of Honor, we can make a few steps forward with that.
Exactly, and, you know, and that was the point I was about to make, Jim, that you anticipated, and that is, you know, because in one of these things that I listened to where you're doing an interview, you pointed out and said, look, ROH started there on Monday nights with HDNet. And I said earlier in the show, I said, how ironic, you know, HDNet, unfortunately, in the least homes of the three shows, but in my book, you know, the best show.
Well, you know, and you've just got to remember that right now HDNet doesn't have the penetration that Spike or, another network, a TBS, has had in the past for a wrestling war. But at the same time, the fans who want to change and who like Ring of Honor and who like fresh faces are a whole lot more internet savvy and tech savvy, and they've got the high-def packages, and they can find the footage and the shows as the cable system's clear. So, and especially with this internet pay-per-view, you can actually see the show as it happens live anywhere in the world at the same time, as long as you've got internet access.
Right, and that's the great thing about that. I'd like to ask you also, too, in terms of the internet and smart fans and everything like that, we did some voting a couple weeks ago here on this program, the Pantheon, as we call it, for the best of the best of all time in different walks of life. I always make sure there's a pro wrestling topic in there somewhere. We did one for greatest tag team of all time this year. The Road Warriors won it, but I will tell you, I voted for the Lane and Eaton version of the Express. And here's the interesting thing. I was talking about this philosophically with somebody. in my Mark days, my pure Mark days, I probably would have voted for the Road Warriors too. But it's one of these things where as I've gotten older, as I've learned different facets of things and everything like that, I've really come to appreciate everything that that particular tag team had. Like all the Midnight Express teams, they were great. But that one, I think, was the best in terms of athleticism. You guys had the, I'll go back to the, you know, before the nuclear heat and everything like that. So it's kind of ironic that, you know, it's the smart fans, isn't it, that are sort of keying this ongoing appreciation of the Express over the years here and just, you know, kind of rediscovering?
I think a lot because also the point was made in the Observer that a lot of the young wrestlers now grew up either watching or emulating the tapes of the Midnight Express, so they're getting a lot more support there among the new wrestlers because they did invent so many moves and revolutionize things. So I think... Yeah, a lot of support from different categories. And, you know, it's really, it's exciting to see that something we did 20 or 25 years ago, you know, is still being recognized like that by the fans and remembered that fondly so that they still, you know, appreciate it. But having said that, concerning what happened 20 or 25 years ago, I know we had a snafu, but it is now past 8 p.m. Eastern, and I am leaving for Philadelphia in the morning and still packing.
Okay,
I would
tell
you I'm bailing on you for American Idol.
No problem. No problem, Jim. Listen,
But the truth is I'm too busy to watch that either.
I want to get you back on sometime soon. Again, apologize for that. I will tell you this on one final conciliatory note, and that being another category we did for the Pantheon, greatest sandwich of all time. The winner ended up being Goodman's Corned Beef Sandwich here in Cleveland, Ohio. Next time you're passing through town, the FDH Lounge, sir, is treating you to that so you can write a restaurant review of Goodman's.
If I come to Cleveland, I get corned beef. I'll be there with bells on. That's an offer I can't refuse.
Yes, we would expect nothing less. All right. Jim, a pleasure as always. We thank you so much. We hope to catch up with you again very soon. And people need to go buy this book if they haven't already, The Midnight Express and Jim Cornette, 25th Anniversary Scrapbook. Thank you as always,
You can
Jim.
Go to jimcornette.com, and you can buy anything related to me.
Yes. And hit your, you know, all
thanks,
your guys,
very
commentaries
much.
As well. We'll talk about those next time. Thanks so much, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye. All right, the great Jim Cornette.